Hello, my name is Kevin Walker Burnett, and you're about to listen to Chapter 1 of All Machines. This is a scored short story that I made for my audio production portfolio, and was written, composed, and performed by me, with sound effects used under Creative Commons licenses from freesoundproject.org. If you find yourself with an audio project of any kind that needs doing, making, or producing, you can find me on LinkedIn, or by messaging me on this platform or service. So, without any further self-promotion, except for a bit there at the end, please enjoy.
Good job, buddy.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
All right. To start you on this particular journey, we are in desperate need of just a little context. My name is Scribe, and I live on a small ranch in the arid hills of a place that I call home, which is just outside of another and much larger place that used to be called Los Angeles, which these days is a little bit less of a place than it used to be. But it did leave something else behind. You see, I wake up every morning, I step out on my front porch, I drink my coffee, and I watch my Jeep Jesper do her morning donuts in the dusty end of the field. After that, I go to feed the clocks and the beepers, I rouse the machine shop, and I set out scrap bales for the tractors. Then, I help out whatever happens to be working with us this week, which just so happens to be a very friendly lawnmower by the name of Tater Tots with separation anxiety and a clogged carburetor. Now, at this point, you might be asking yourself, Scrab, how did all those machines come alive? Or, Scrab, are you in full possession of your sanity? I gotta be honest, I'm not sure that knowing the answer to either of those questions would provide you constructive or productive feedback. We are long past what in the world is happening, and we've speeded on by, can we stop this? See, we're living in the neighborhood of, what do we do now? Well, now we have to trust the machines that we work with as much as they trust us. And that right there is a very tall order. On a slightly related note, for those of you who have not met me nor needed my services, I run shop at a junkyard gulch, mending machines and gadgets. My advice is free, my rates are negotiable, and I do house calls in the valley. Just leave a message with Ricky on the 40-meter band, or if you don't have a ham radio, you can just drop by during the daylight hours. Help is just a few dirt roads away. There may be some of you living far enough outside of the city limits that you have never seen a living machine. You may not believe me, and I do not blame you. You may question my sanity, and that is good practice in a world that is not sane. But if you've never seen something like a living car, I assure you that they are real. And if hopping a ride sounds like fun, they are dangerous. As dangerous as anything that weighs more than a few tons and can move a mile a minute, now just a lot more unpredictable. Now, this more or less brings me to the reason that I'm here. I've spent a few decades helping out where I can, trying to give people the literal or metaphorical tools they need to live their lives in this brave new world. But every time that we adapt to a new normal, the city formerly known as Los Angeles gets even more strange. When I said that I have a story to tell, well, that's true. But I don't know how it ends, and I don't know where it leaves us. So, if you think you're up for it, I'll be taking you with me on my journey through the ruins of Los Angeles to the tangled depths of the concrete jungle. I cannot promise you satisfaction, I do not know if I will have any answers. But I guarantee there will be mystery, with equal parts peril and spectacle. And, along the way, we might even learn what secrets lie waiting in the heart of my home. So settle on down and buckle up. Coming up next, Chapter 1. Concerning Baby.
Thank you.
Last week, around about 3 a.m., I woke up to what I thought was a very large bumblebee fighting a pane of glass, but turned out to be a little drone trying its absolute best to get my attention. So, before it put a hole in my window, I let the little fella in and saw that it had a message written on it. The message was as follows: "Please come at once. Our baby is in trouble." I would like to point out at this time that the word baby is capitalized, though I did not learn why until a bit later. Now, this was an unnecessarily cryptic message, but I was bereft of clients, I had no meetings, and the destination was only about an hour away. So, I found some clean clothes, I stepped into my boots, and I went to go warm up my Jeep, that would be Jesper, and we set off in the direction of the Northwest Tangle. The Tangle is a collection of overgrown freeways where roving packs of motorbikes, herds of fleet cars, and the occasional stampede of semi could bear down on you with only a rumble for warning. On the other side of the Tangle, well, that was the rest of the valley. Now that was the sort of sprawling pavement that I wanted to avoid as long as possible. There were too many things out there that would see us as an easy meal. My destination was an abandoned hotel in the general vicinity of the Northwest Tangle. Now, when I got there, I discovered two things in short order. First, the building was encircled by overpass, meaning I had no easy way to get in. Second, there was a massive cloud of dust engulfing one entire side of the building, which was bad as far as omens go. After about a half hour, I managed to find an old rail path that seemed like it was headed in about the right direction. So, Jesper and I took a long trip down a dark tunnel. And at the other side was about 20 feet of loose dirt blocking our path. And when I got to the top, I finally got my bearings. I was standing on the rim of a large crater being dug at the side of this not-so-abandoned hotel. Presumably the folks who needed my help with their baby, capital B. Now the dust was so thick that I couldn't see the bottom of that pit, only the building rising above me. And I saw a small speck hover near the open fifth floor windows that must have been that plucky drone that was playing fisticuffs with my bedroom window. I was, at the very least, in the right place. Which, of course, is when someone yelled, "Look out!" And I hit the dirt just in time to see a digging bucket, larger than I was, missing me by a hairdo in the brim of my hat. Now, after my close call, I scrambled with all 4 feet to an open window that these folks were using as a door. In it was a young man dressed in leather and decorative chains. Far be it for me to comment on anyone's fashion, considering the large number of hats, flannels, and handkerchiefs available in my wardrobe. I asked him what in the world was happening and where the baby was, hoping for some sort of clarification on the situation. So, he leaned out the window and pointed down into that dust-filled pit and said, "She's all bugged up." Which was not any great help. So I tried asking him again where the baby was and how they were in trouble, which is when he cleared up any confusion that I might have had. "No, that's baby down there. She's our power shovel." A brief word on industrial excavators. If you want to dig a hole, you grab a shovel. If you want to dig a big hole quickly, then you use something like a bucket digger. Now, if you have, for some reason, a powerful desire to level a large hill or small mountain, well, then you use a power shovel. These things are some of the largest vehicles around. They can move literal tons of debris in a single scoop using a shovel that's powered with winches and cable. Now, the design is almost as old as oil and just about as tough. I had the same reaction as if someone said they'd had a pet brontosaurus. Why? In that moment, I desperately wished that carrier drone had been eaten by a passing helicopter before it found me and delivered its message. This was not the sort of job that I expected doing today, and I was not prepared for whatever awaited me down below. But, and I hate myself for this, I couldn't help but hear the way the young man said baby, like that machine down there that was trying to topple his home had meant something to them. And they gave it a name like baby. Well, hell. The both of us looked at each other and said approximately the same thing at the same time. "She's gonna bring the building down!" So, I put my hand on his shoulder, and I made my best attempt at bedside manner. I told him that everything was gonna be alright, and I asked him what happened and how. So he said, I don't know, Super just said the old girl started going crazy, digging like she had somewhere to go with no warning at all. I had hoped for more help, but there was really only one thing that I could do. I told him that I needed to get down there and see for myself, and he broke my heart by putting his hand on my shoulder and saying, I'm going too. Well, all right. The only way to get to the bottom of the pit was to start sliding down the loose dirt and hope you didn't hit anything big enough to hurt you. It was somewhere between a reckless skid and an all-out stumble. For a moment, there was nothing but us, the dust, and the beast at the bottom. Now, I'd only ever seen large cranes in magazines, and not many magazines survived the Shredder Wars. See, Baby was the largest vehicle that I had ever been close to, and I couldn't help but be a little awestruck in between my numerous apprehensions about the direction that my day was headed. Before my deputized mechanics assistant asked what we should do next, I grabbed his forearm, I closed my eyes, and I tried to see if I could discern the direction of Baby. The fact that I nearly walked into Baby's treads was more accident or providence than it was intent. The tracks were as tall as I was and disappeared into the dust in either direction. However big that I thought Baby was, well, she was even bigger. For a moment, I was wondering how to get to the cab when I heard the squeal of rotating metal. And I didn't even think before I pulled the young man to the ground and the cab passed right over us. Since we were close enough to talk, I took this moment to ask an important question. Hey, kid, what's your name? Dodge? I do not think that he appreciated that I found that funny. So, I told him, Dodge, we gotta get up there. Where's the ladder? All he had time to do was point. I saw the ladder on the back of the housing while it rotated, and I told Dodge that we had to jump for it, and to his credit, he said the most sensible thing that I had heard all day. Are you crazy? I ask myself that on a daily basis, every time I've swung my legs out of bed after the clock rolls morning racket. The answer to his question was a simple no, with the additional caveat, not yet. I pulled him away from the tracks and waited for Baby to rotate the back of her housing in our direction. We had about 3 seconds from when I spotted the ladder in the dust and it was already rushing by us. So, I managed to grab the lowest rung and pulled Dodge with me until he managed to grab what I had too. Now, I am not what one would call a peak physical specimen. Even so, working with machinery all day gets you into good enough shape that I could summon the upper body strength to pull myself and then Dodge onto the catwalk. It ran between the two generators and two winches, all the way to the glass-covered cab. Now, when I had a chance to catch my breath and take a look at my surroundings, I let slip just a few words that I shall not repeat here. And when Dodge saw what I did, well, let's just say that he had some choice words of his own, and leave it at that. Baby had spots. 3 mechanical headless dogs with backward legs turned to face Dodge and I. I felt Dodge starting to contemplate a dive back into the dirt. I held his arm. It may come to that, but we couldn't afford to show fear. Steady, I said to him, myself, and the 3 eerie robot dogs standing in front of us. Calling them dogs does a disservice to humanity's best friend. See, dogs have heads. That's the best part. Now, these had, from left to right, a multi-tool, a grabber, and a machete. I had some more complaints about my day that I voiced to no one in particular, just before Dodge said, don't move. Smart kid, but now that I've had a moment to think, I had other plans. See, spots were a problem. They're smarter than a calculator, more agile than a dirt bike, and more dangerous than a refrigerator. I don't know what sick soul in the pre-protomation world decided that life would be a lot easier with headless 4-legged robot dogs. To be perfectly honest with you, it's hard for me to see the appeal. At best, they were a pest, but they liked to run in packs and infested larger machinery like they were parasites. Baby? Well, Baby was their ideal prey, and they were eating her alive, and all she wanted to do was escape. There are times in my life when the line between mechanic and veterinarian becomes something of a slippery chasm. See, if I was a mechanic, I'd put removing the pests as a higher priority than making sure I didn't spook my already terrified patient. If a rock were hell and a hard place Hades, well, that's where I was. I'd seen spots tear apart semi-trucks and HVAC systems. I told everyone I knew to shoot on sight. But they just kept getting smarter. And there just kept on being more of them. In the brief second or two between when the spots spotted us and we spotted the spots, I happened to notice the one with the grabber and the one with the multi-tool were halfway inside of the cab. Now, before I could register what that meant, the spot with the machete stepped forward. I didn't have any more time to think. So, I told Dodge to tuck and roll, and I threw him off the catwalk. I did not hear what he yelled at me on the way down, but I do not imagine that it was thank you. In this split second, I knew I had one thing to my advantage. Spots were not that good at climbing ladders. I figured my best chance to stop Baby from digging her own grave would be disconnecting each of the two generators from the winch and hydraulic system, considering I couldn't just get to the cab and hit that emergency stop. Now, the fact that you are here in this story means that I am alive and well, and escaped with my dignity intact. And that is mostly true, notwithstanding my dignity. I burned my hand and my arm getting to the top of that generator, which was running hot and smelled strong enough of diesel that I felt like I was marinating in the stuff. Baby had been running at max for I don't know how many hours, and everything sounded like it was redlining, like she'd shake herself apart at any moment. Well, I figured that if I disconnected those winches from the generator, Baby couldn't dig. So, I got up, I leaned over the edge of generator 2, where the power pins connected to the winch. Now, the problem with having plugs that close to hot grease was that everything, absolutely everything, was covered in black goo and rubber. I had no idea which pin was which. I had to pull at least 3 of those 5 connectors. And if I pulled that neutral pin, this generator was going to send a cease and desist letter to my heart on its way out of my feet. I considered my options upside down while leaning over the side of the generator. This is why I had to have strings, after all. But my time was cut short by the machete spot putting its 4 legs on the railing and trying to separate my arms from the rest of me. Now, I didn't have time to reason, only just enough to gamble. So, I said Shepherd's Prayer. Please, Lord, don't let me f*** this up. I pulled the 3 middle plugs, half expecting to drop dead on the spot. And I opened my eyes, only a little surprised that I was still alive, and I swung myself up back to where the spots couldn't get me. I didn't have time to rest, either. I had no way of telling if I'd pulled the right plugs until I unplugged the other generator too, and that would be generator 1 in case anyone was confused. Now, I wish I could say that I jumped over onto generator 1 gracefully, but all that matters is that I made it, bruised knees and all. So, I pull the same 3 pins. I hear the winches start to backspin, and I hear that giant digging bucket hit Earth. Baby had finally been stopped. Of course, this made the spots angry. Now, I'll be honest, I did not believe the folks who said that when spots got angry, you could tell because of the red lights. It is, I assure you, entirely factual and more than a little disturbing. They were not pleased that I had ruined their fun, or that I had slowed the inexorable tide of their insidious intent. Now that I had interrupted their project, I had gained their full focus. Now at this point, I had only thought as far ahead as disconnect power, and now I had run out of items to cross off of my to-do list. From where I stood, I saw 2 options. I could either try to fight off the 3 spots, or I could stay up there, where it was safe, and wait until they ran out of battery. Now we come to the moment where I realized something very important that had so far escaped my attention. If spots couldn't climb ladders, how did they get up here in the first place? I was certain that the ladder would have been impossible for their backwards legs, and I'd been so worried about the spots that I had neglected to look up. My day was already off the rails, but what I saw made me drop my jaw and forget what words were. See, there was something clinging to the gantry above me, with too many legs that were too long for comfort, like it could just reach out and tap me on my shoulder. Since Baby had stopped moving, the dust had begun to settle, revealing even more legs and, off to the side, a small group of people led by Dodge, a man with a rifle, and a woman with oil-stained overalls. Now, I held up my hands in a futile attempt to stop them approaching, but I didn't dare take my eyes off of the, well, let's just call it a spider. As I recall, in the brief moments where it was revealed to us, it had 8 to 10 legs with 3 to 4 joints each, all connected to a small central body. Nothing was recognizable as either mechanical or animal. It looked like something you'd get if you asked someone who had never seen a machine or a spider to draw something that was both. I should mention that my experience with things of a mechanical nature is extensive, but not exhaustive. I tied my brain into knots trying to understand what I was seeing. Still don't. Someone from Dodge's settlement yelled something I vaguely understood as, "What's that?" That's a very good question. The man with the rifle leveled it at the monster, so I yelled, "Don't shoot," but considering I hadn't actually shut the generators off, I didn't have a prayer of being heard. One loud bang interrupted me as I prepared to do something drastic and ill-advised, so before I could even make myself a distraction, the spider gathered its legs close and launched itself into the distance. I couldn't tell if it was hurt, startled, or shy, just that it was gone. There were some shouts and yells of triumph from the hastily assembled militia, but I kept my head on a swivel, convinced that there was some sort of trick. Now, in that moment of tension, the three spots jumped off of the service catwalk and into the dirt below. Before anyone could get them, they had righted themselves, were climbing up loose dirt, and had disappeared. Dodge, who I was glad to see was unharmed, if a little dirty, helped the woman in the overalls up to Baby's catwalk. She put her hands in her pockets and looked at me like I was someplace that I wasn't supposed to be. But in fairness, I was standing on a generator the size of a shipping container that I assumed was hers. So she said, "My name's Supra, these are my people, and this is my machine. You're the one who got my message?" And I told her that it was me. "What did you do to Baby?" She used the sort of voice that I assume grade school principals used. My spine straightened of its own accord, and I filled her in on the last few minutes as Dodge shut the generators down. Now for just a moment, I had to enjoy that sweet and blissful quiet. We checked Baby from top to bottom, cleared her filters, tested her levels, and cleaned the gunk from her cables. By the time we were done, Baby was up and running, and the sun was close to setting. Instead of trying to drive back on dirt tracks in the dark, I accepted Supra's offer of a rooftop to sleep on. I sipped a mug of broth, I ate crackers, and I watched the sun set over the hills to the west, orange and red in the smog. When it was finally twilight, I got to watch the light show. I always loved that. An entire valley filled with tangle lights, spotlight colonies, and lantern palms, each flickering on in the darkness. From where I was, I saw the closest thing to a map of the valley that we had, just rendered in dots of light. I could see the old rows of lantern palms marking the neighborhoods, long lines of white and red where the highways were, and the occasional helicopter sweeping the sprawl with the spotlight. Somewhere out there, in the night, was a spider making its way through the darkness. I didn't sleep a wink. When the sun finally peeked over the eastern side of the valley, I gathered my things, I met Jesper where I'd left her, I tipped my hat to Dodge and Supra, and I started my trek home. I managed to get back early enough to feed the Koopa clocks, set out some scrap bales and checked on our patients, a rowdy Mustang and an aging pickup truck with a bum axle. I tended to as much of the ranch as I could, but by lunchtime I'd had it. I fell asleep on the porch, next to a half-eaten sandwich and most of a beer. I didn't even get a chance to kick my boots off. I dreamed about that spider, tiptoeing its way through the valley on sky-high legs, and I had the same dream every night that week. I was never the biggest fan of unanswered questions, and I really couldn't abide a mystery, but then again, I never really did figure out what curiosity did to that cat. All I knew was that something was wrong in what was left of Los Angeles, and I wasn't going to be able to let this one go. It is home, after all. You have been listening to All Machines, Chapter 1, Concerning Baby. Written, composed, and performed by yours truly, Kevin Walker Burnett. This project has been released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 4.0 international license. All Machines is an independent and fictional media project. Any similarities to existing people or technology is accidental, as long as it's not satire. Sound files were found on freesoundproject.org, and a full list of contributors can be found in the description. For those of you who have not met me or needed my services, I have a media production business in Los Angeles, California. My advice is, in fact, free, and my rates are indeed negotiable. If you need it developed, produced, or finished, I might be able to help or find you someone who can. And if this is something that you liked, want to hear more of, or really had any feelings about at all, you can let me know in the reviews or the comments, wherever they may be found. All machines will eventually return. Until then, thank you for listening.